Why is that? Why is me laying out my resume, you laying out your resume, stupid?
It's all about you.
Number one, it's all about me. But number two, your resume correlates loosely with whether or not you know what you're doing. If your resume correlated accurately with what you did, you guys would never make a bad hire, would you? What did I say to that father? Here's what I said. All right, so Haitian kidnappers are not killing kidnap victims these days. I realize it's really stupid because they kill each other at the drop of a hat, but they're not killing kidnap victims. Now, today is Thursday, and Haitian kidnappers love to party on Saturday night. So if you say the things that I want you to say, when I want you to say them, we'll have your son out late Friday, early Saturday morning. He said, tell me what you want me to do. And we had his son out Saturday morning. So let's break down a little bit what I said and what I didn't say. First of all, which took more time? Me laying out my resume or me laying out what he was faced with? It took less time for me to lay out what he was faced with, didn't it? I will tell you also in the course of getting his son out, he never asked me how long I'd been an FBI agent. He never asked me how long I'd been a negotiator. He never asked me how many countries I'd negotiated in. He never asked me how many cases in Haiti I'd negotiated in. He never even asked me how many times I've been to Haiti. You know how many times I've been to Haiti? Never. I've never been to Haiti. Did I speak French? Did I speak Creole? Did he ask me those questions? And you may have asked yourself already, you know, there's basically 168 countries in this world, a lot of languages. How many languages does Chris Voss speak if he negotiated all over the world? And by now, you realize the answer to that is barely one. He didn't ask me any of those questions. I told him what he was facing, because when someone says, how are you going to help me? Their first question is, okay, so you've been doing this for a long time. Do you see what I see? Do you know what I'm looking at? I laid it out for him, and I offered him the slightest bit of insight. And they say to themselves, wow, if you see clearly what's in front of me, there's a really good chance you know what you're doing. Do I have to explain this to you? Do I have to explain to you my challenges? You lay it out. One of two things happen. They say to you, that's right. Or they say, no, that's not it. This is it. What happens when they say, that's not it. This is it? You're in dialogue. You're in collaboration instantly. You're trying to get to dialogue and collaboration instantly, aren't you? And many people don't realize that when somebody corrects you, that means you're in collaboration, you're in dialogue. And you're on your way with that. Here's a couple of other things I did not do. And one of them is probably the two worst habits you have. Did I try to get him to say yes? You guys are hardwired to hear yes. You guys are desperate for it. You guys got an addiction to yes. You didn't know it was going to be that kind of a meeting, did you? Hi, Chris. It's so bad. Here's how bad it is. And getting you out of that, you think getting people to say yes, the yes momentum, the yesable proposition, get them to say yes, a lot of little things, and they say yes to the big thing. You're addicted to that. And getting out of that is going to be one of the most difficult things you could do. Not complicated, but here's how difficult it's going to be. Everybody make a fist with either hand. Right thumb up. Left forefinger out. Now switch. That hurt, didn't it? Switch back. Some of you are going like, I got your left forefinger. I saw him right here. He looked, see if he sees this. Was that complicated, what I asked you to do? Do you need to be Elon Musk to know what I was trying to get you to do? No. But it was awkward and it was difficult. I know there's somebody in the back room right now going like, Here's the cool thing about that, brain science. The difficulty that you felt trying to get that done is actually the creation of a new neural pathway. That's a cool idea. The neuroscience rules are the synapses that fire together wire together. Now, your yes habit is hardwired. That road is built, and you're used to screaming down that road in your thought processes. Getting out of it is going to take some repetitions. How many? 63. John Foley, Blue Angel pilot, I heard him give a speech probably about 2 years ago. He talked about wiring grooves into their brain, which is the same thing as the neural pathways and new habits that I'm talking about. And they, you know, if they don't wire a groove into their brain, these guys crash into each other in the air and people start to die instantly. And he said they did some research on it. He said it took about 63 to 65 repetitions to put a new habit in the brain. But at the very beginning, it's as hard as that was, and you quit and you give up. And you, because you think it's going to be that hard the whole time. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. It hurts my head. But you don't know how close you actually are to breaking through a new habit. Everybody knows what the bell curve looks like. It's very steep, and then it peaks, and then you take off on the other end. You're building a new habit. Some of the new habits I'm going to share with you today, at the beginning, you just see how steep this thing is initially. And you're like, you know, this is too hard. I'm not doing this anymore. But I got to get you out of the yes habit. I got to get you out of that. That is the worst thing you could possibly do. I don't even bother with the word yes. And when we were working on the book, one of the guys that I was working with, he said, hey, as a hostage negotiator, how'd you get kidnappers to say yes? Only question I can remember being thoroughly stumped by, because I'd never really thought about it that hard at that time. And I said, no, we never did. It's a useless word. So we didn't even bother with it. So some of you are sitting there thinking right now, like, okay, fine, now what do you want me to do? Because that's all I do. And you know what? I close deals that way, too. You can't tell me that I don't close deals getting people to say yes. Now, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying your batting average isn't anywhere close to what it should be. You're batting 125 when you should be batting 350 for you baseball players. Yeah, stick to 125. You want to stay there? Because this is what it looks like, and this is why it fails. Would you like to have a more efficient system? Would you like to have more customers? Would you like to have more free time? Buy my product. Now, this is, maybe there was a point in time when this was a good idea. Maybe. But the swampland timeshare salesman, the coupon book, the $50,000 coupon book salesman, has already battered them so hard that they're battered by yes. You guys know anecdotally what happens if you come across a battered child and you try to hug them. They still flinch and jump back from you. But wait a minute, I was trying to give them a hug. I'm a good guy. I meant well. I wasn't trying to trap him. I was trying to have integrity. It doesn't matter. They're battered. Everybody's battered by yes. You got to stop this. You got to stop it. Okay, fine. You convinced me. Now what? You know who this is? Jack Welch. Jack. One of the most famous CEOs, former CEO of GE, author of a number of books, Jack winning the real life MBA. Jack Welch came to Los Angeles a couple years ago. He and his wife Susie, the latest book, The Real Life MBA. I'm going to go to the book signing. I'm going to ask Jack to come speak at the class I'm teaching at that time at the USC Marshall School of Business in the MBA program. Negotiation. I want Jack to come speak to my negotiation class. How many people try to get Jack Welch to say yes to something that day? Everybody. How many people in a book signing are going to try to get Jack Welch to say yes to something? They're going to come up to him and say, hey, Jack, you want to come to the house? Wife makes a great meatloaf. How many people? Everybody. You're me. What do you say? How much time have I got? Maybe not 7 seconds, even less than that, because at a book signing, what happens? A guy like Jack Welch, you come in when you're about 5, 6, 7 people from Jack, somebody comes up to you and says, what's your name? They write your name down on a piece of paper so Jack can write your name on the book, they say, but in reality, so you don't talk to him. He doesn't have to say to you, what's your name? He said, Chris, good luck, keep going. Problem one, there's 300 people online. If I try to stop and talk to Jack Welch for even 20 seconds, we're now there for 6 hours, right? Problem two, Jack Welch, a legitimate celebrity. They don't know who I am. They haven't put me through a metal detector. They don't know I don't have a gun. As a matter of fact, I have a gun. But they don't know that I'm an FBI agent. They haven't got any ID for me. I could come up. I'm going to get within arm's length of Jack Welch. I could do what I want. Jane Fonda was at a book signing a number of years ago. A Vietnam vet got within arm's length of her and spit right in her face. Action is quicker than reaction. I'm going to be arm's length from Jack Welch. He's got security people there that are worried about his safety. They know they can't stop me from doing whatever I want to do. I could walk up to Jack Welch. I could take his face in my hands and kiss him right on the lips if I wanted to. He got a disgusted look on his face from that. But they don't know what I'm going to do. So everybody's more than jumpy. I walk up to Jack Welch and this is what I say. Is it a ridiculous idea for you to come and speak at the negotiation course that I teach at USC? And he looks up and to the left, he gets this really intense scowl on his face, and he just freezes. He doesn't move. And I think, I just killed Jack Welch. Because he's old, right? I figure he got mad. And he had a stroke, and he's going to die because he's so angry. He's going to fall right in front of me. And then they're going to tackle me. They're going to blame me. They're going to drag me out in cuffs. And I'll say, but I'm an FBI agent. And they go, well, you killed Jack Welch. Doesn't matter. So initially, when he doesn't die, I'm relieved. But he still doesn't move. And I'm thinking, now he's going to start going, security, security, because he looks furious. Finally, he looks at me and he says, this is my personal assistant's name. This is a special Twitter account we have set up to communicate with her. I will call her, tell her who you are and what you want. I think we're going to be in Los Angeles in the fall. If we are, we'll come in and speak to your course. Because I triggered a no. I triggered a calibrated no, a calculated no. I changed the yes question to a no. And I'm here to tell you, a calibrated no is worth 5 yeses. Think about what he thought through and the steps that he thought through before he answered me. Because all the rest of that stuff I would have had, if he'd have said yes, I'd have said, who do I get in touch with? How do I coordinate with them? How do I communicate with them? Will you call them and brief them? We're talking about the fall. Where are you going to be in the fall? Think of how many questions he went ahead and answered for me. It's insane. We do this on a regular basis. I don't bother with yes. We did a training in New York just about earlier this month. It's still May, right? We did about 2 weeks ago. Very intense, intensive master class. I happened to run across Robert Herjavec from Shark Tank in New York, or in LA just a couple weeks ago. By the way, a wonderful guy. I mean, a wonderful, gracious, charming, impressive guy. I would work with him. I would work for him. He was telling me about how he develops his people. Phenomenal guy. I offer him a free ticket. He's gracious enough to say, how many can we buy? And so we're going back and forth on how many he could buy, and I'm trying to get a commitment out of him, and the event is selling. Like, it is, the door is slamming shut. And I realize that if I don't get a nearly instantaneous commitment from him, because we're charging people a lot of money for these tickets. We're charging people just short of $2,000 per head to be there. And we got people buying them. I can't keep this window open for him. I don't care if he is a billionaire. We got people want these tickets. So at 5 o'clock on a Friday, I have to get a commitment from him now. We're in L.A. 5 o'clock on a Friday, it's 8 p.m. here in New York. The other problem is business opens in New York 3 hours earlier than it does in Los Angeles. If I haven't got him committed before the start of the next business day, he's out. I sent him an email that says, are you against making a commitment for these tickets now? Are you against paying for them before the start of business tomorrow? And I get an email back instantly, says, no, we're going to take three in total. We'll pay for them before business starts tomorrow. Less than 20 minutes later, I'm getting emails from his assistants to pay. Now, what would you have done normally? You know, how many would you like? Would you please commit now? Can you pay before the close of business tomorrow would be the normal thing? But it's going to be too late. But you help people think by switching out of yes and into no. I don't bother with yes. We don't bother with yes. I could belabor it at length. Yes is commitment. Commitment creates anxiety. No is protection. Protection makes people feel safe and secure and helps them think. Anxiety interferes with people's thought processes. Every time you try to get somebody to say yes to something, you're creating anxiety because they say to themselves, what have I let myself in for? What's the catch? What's the hook? Where's this going? What are you trying to do to me? These are anxiety-creating instances which interfere with their ability to make decisions. It's not me telling you this. This is neuroscience. Anxiety slows the brain. Don't take my word for it. Okay, fine. So what if no is not enough? And this is really what sold the book to the publisher. They'd never seen anything like this before. It's in our utter disdain for yes. Because what's the most famous negotiating book in the world anyway, right? Everybody knows getting to yes, right? Yes is supposed to be what you want to get people to say. Yes is not what you want people to say. This is what you want them to say after the no. Now, that's kind of disappointing, right? Like, that's not special. That doesn't make me feel good the way yes makes me feel good. I love yes. I got a bad addiction to yes. I'm happy when I hear you. That's right. It's not what it is to you when it comes out of their mouth. It's what it is to them. That's right is what people say when they think that what they've just heard is the total and complete truth. There's two simultaneous things that happen. It triggers a subtle epiphany in people's brains. There's a chemical change with epiphany. They feel better. They feel smarter. They feel clarity. Stephen Covey's advice from way back when, seek first to understand, then be understood. And so we thought, okay, all we got to do is say to somebody, I understand. And then you get to talk, right? Because they're ready to hear you. No. It's the changes show understanding first. Trigger a that's right. Then and only then are they ready to hear you. Whatever political side of the aisle you're on, I'll give you an example to prove it to you. Last presidential election, the two candidates were on TV engaged in a debate when whichever candidate you loved, when you decided to vote for them, they said something in the debate you thoroughly believed in. You didn't look at the TV and say, you're right. You looked at the TV and you went, that's right. That's what people say when they're all in. They say, that's right.